Get back. I'm all right, Jack. Keep your hands off of my stack. Money, it's a hit. Don't get me back. Do good, good bullish. I'm in.
And welcome to another edition of your economic show entitled Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunabrini. Thanks for joining me today. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Please remember, indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of the staff in Cambridge. Its staff members are underwriters. And welcome to the 294th show, Up, Up, and Away. We guess we're coming up on show 300. Wonder what we're going to do for that. Money Matters is always about money. Not always. We do investing in community, which covers community outreach and nonprofits and great companies and elections and all sorts of things that have a bearing on our community. Because investing not only regards money as a conduit, but also your health and your garden and your car and your home and your spirituality, everything. So investing covers a wide variety. It's not just about money. Whether you have a lot of it or a little of it, money, that is, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another. It controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it, about our lives and livelihood. In short, money matters is about you. Thanks for joining me. I always get a kick when I see, I think, articles that are just designed to take your breath away. And I saw one this morning by Sean Langlois. Published by, it's on the MarketWatch.com website today. And Leon Cooperman, the billionaire boss at Omega Advisors, joking to a crowd at the Delivering Alpha conference in New York this week, says about a win by a particular candidate could mean for investors. He goes on to say, the Democratic Party, and we don't support Democratic or Republican Party here on this show, it's non-political. But this article is just, Democratic Party seems to be leaning towards the left on policies, which is very harmful for the economy. His opinion. I don't like the shift to the left, he explained, which was Leon Cooperman. He explained to CNBC, adding that the market, of course, if Warren, Elizabeth Warren is elected next president, the stock market won't open. Okay. If she's elected, it would be a bear market, and they would go on for a year and go down 25%. He said, you won't make the people, poor people rich by making rich people poor. That's an interesting statement. You won't make the poor people rich by making rich people poor. He goes on to say, of course, as one member of the financial Twitterati pointed out, fears for a Democratic leader steering the ship just might be overblown. Okay. So, there you go. Take it for what it's worth. That one, I think, is designed to make you gasp your breath. Okay, so let's talk about what's going on in the markets today. Okay? We always cover the indices and what they're doing. And so the Dow sitting at 27,123, down 23 points. NASDAQ and the Russell and the S&P, yeah, they're all just different indexes. All-time high for the Dow, oh, I believe, let's take a look. What is the all-time high? We're at 27,123. So we're going to look at the all-time high. All-time high apparently appears to be 27,219. So we're getting close to it. Let's see if we got any higher highs up there. Yeah, 27,349 on July 23rd. So we're getting close to that. What does that mean? Well, like we've always said, the large numbers, according to the technical people, are support and resistance. And so what that means is, because we're at 27,123, the 27,000, the big number, 27,000 below us would be support. And the big number above us for resistance would be 28,000. Now, the technocrats who believe such things also have minor and major points on all sorts of markets. So there's like resistance and support levels for the S&P and the NASDAQ and Russell. And then just think of it as those are different markets. So when you want to go buy a television, you go to a television store. And when you go buy food, you go to a grocery store. The different markets, the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the Russell, and the S&P, are just different places where you go to buy a particular stock. So if you go to buy a particular stock, say AYZ, blank fictitious company, they'll tell you, okay, that's listed on the S&P, or that's listed somewhere else. So it just means where you go to handle the stock, to buy and sell it. Of course, you go to Schwab, or wherever you go. No endorsement for Schwab, of course. Go to, it's just a broker that everybody's familiar with. You go to Schwab or TD Ameritrade or wherever anybody does their brokerage firm on their own or through their advisor. You just tell them you want to buy a stock and they'll just go to the right market to do so. In fact, you can't go to another market if you want to buy a particular stock and it's listed there. That's where you got to go. So, one common misconception that I see from a lot of investors is when you buy a stock that's publicly traded, let's say you buy a stock of Phillips 66, which is not traded anymore. It's a different company now. But let's say you did. Okay? When you buy a share of that, the money doesn't go to Phillips 66. People say, well, when I buy a stock for blank blank company, it goes to that company. No, it doesn't. You're buying the stock from another investor. So, Phillips 66 or whatever company you're looking at made money on that stock when it had the initial public offering. After that, they don't make any money on the stock that goes up and down. Now, the board of directors and the VPs and usually some of the owners and hopefully some of the employers who own stock would make money if it goes up, and so they want it to go up. But as a general rule, when you buy stock in a public market, your money doesn't go to them. It goes to somebody else who's selling it, right? There's buyers and there's sellers everywhere. So that's what's going on at yahoofinance.com. And we'll keep an eye on it. Let's take a look at some of the other news articles here that's happening in Yahoo Finance. It's a good resource. I like Yahoo Finance. You can see all sorts of things about particular securities if you go to Yahoo Finance. They have a little section at the top, a search section. You just plug in a particular company and it'll give you all sorts of things. For instance, I'll plug in a popular hardware company, okay, three-digit company. And here's what Yahoo Finance will tell you, okay? It tells you the previous close, where the shares closed. It tells you what it opened at this morning. It tells you the bid and the ask. It's a small difference between what you pay and what you sell for it. Tells you the day's range, the 52-week range, the volume of shares, the average volume of shares, the market cap, the beta. The beta is how it moves in relation to the rest of the market. So they consider 1.00 as moves in lockstep with the market. As a general rule, it never really does, but depending on what market you're looking at. The P.E. ratio, price to earnings ratio, in other words, what the price of the stock is in relation to how much the company earns. The earnings per share, which would mean how much each share earns, according to the accounting that they use. What day they will post earnings. The dividend, what it has yielded in the past. Dividends are not guaranteed, can be cut, reduced, increased at any time. The ex-dividend date, which is when they will announce, is the dividend date and the ex-dividend date. And announcement date, and the one-year target estimate from other analysts, and then there's a whole bunch more you can look at. You can look at the company outlook, whether it's undervalued, overvalued, et cetera, et cetera. You can look at a chart of the thing. You can punch on conversations, what people are talking about, statistics, all sorts of statistics that you're probably not interested in, all sorts of crazy statistics on the books, historical data, what it's done over the past, profile, what it does, who the key executives are, the address, what kind of company it's in, where it's located. They give you a little map, big description, how the corporation is governed, et cetera, et cetera. And then it gives you financials. For those of you that are interested in such things, it'll give you historical data, financials, operating expenses, non-reoccurring charges, all sorts of crazy stuff there. Analysis, it'll give you how many analysts are following the stock, what their average estimates are, number of analysts that are following on the revenues and the profit, earnings, et cetera, et cetera. And then finally, it'll give you options. If you're an option trader, it'll tell you how to do options. So we've covered options in the past here, so we won't get into that today. So there you go. So anyway, that's what the Dow's sitting today, up minus 17 points. Not a whole lot of movement here. Apparently the tariff thing is off the table for now. At least it doesn't seem to be reflected in the market movement today. Crude oil, of course, had a spike. Had a pretty good spike a couple days back when the Saudi Arabian oil plants was hit by drones. You know, when I first heard that, I thought, oh, they got hit by those little four-propeller drones. And then I thought, what did they do? Fly a bunch of these and dive them? No. Drones, the bigger ones. You know, the ones that some of the aircraft companies make that'll look the size of a car or whatever. I guess they're missile attacks. What was surprised me is it knocked out 5% of the world's supply of the production, let's say. So that's a lot. You know, that's a real lot. Not quite sure where it came from. People are blaming various companies. Iran Gaming is there, Iran or Iraq. Can't remember which one of those. And so Saudi Arabia came back and said, yeah, we'll get this stuff back online pretty quick. So crude oil kind of fell again a little bit. So something like that is called a, quote, black swan event in the market. Black swan, an unforeseen event. This is usually not market related. 9/11 would be one, a tsunami or an earthquake. Assassination of a public official might be it. Currency problems. So we're going to cover something that happened in the money market funds this week. And it was fairly significant. Nobody read anything about it, and I'm surprised it didn't move the markets. But let's get into what happened so you can understand what the news event was that you didn't hear about. And it's called a market that's called the repurchase agreements. Repurchase agreements. The nickname for that are repo, the repo market, REPO, like repossessing a car, but it has nothing to do with that. Now, since the 08 crisis, okay, it's common knowledge and public information that the Federal Reserve injected somewhere in the area of $5 trillion into the banking system, both here and abroad, injected money into banks and funds abroad, too, to help stabilize the financial system. That in 08 was, some say, most agree, spiraling out of control due to the beginning domino, which is the real estate implosion. From michael.hudson.com, they said that they also guaranteed another $7 trillion or so of debt from various institutions in addition to the injections. So they put in $5 trillion, and they also guaranteed about $7 trillion worth of debt. So says that website. When I say guaranteed, well, remember they came forward when GM was in trouble and guaranteed their warranties. So that's a guarantee. Or they came through with Buy America bonds, and they basically said, you know, buy corporate and state bonds, and if you lose money, we'll make a consideration for that. Those are the guarantees. They also took stock in a variety of public and semi-public companies. And so it's safe to say that the markets have calmed down since 08. The market's rising to new highs just this year. And the real estate market, for all intents and purposes, has taken off to the proverbial races since 2011. That said, last week, at least for me, witnessed a blast from the past in an area that you probably don't know about. The average Joe doesn't really understand this market or know it even exists. And that is the repo market, the overnight repurchase agreements, which is a market mechanism the Fed uses as a gas pedal into the economy. Okay? When you push down on the gas pedal, the Fed injects money into the system via the banking system. When you lift up on the pedal, it takes money out of the system. The repo market is like plumbing. And remember, it's called repurchase agreements. We call it repo for short. The repo market is plumbing for the financial system. The banks and the hedge funds and money market funds, they have tremendous expenses, daily investments, daily financial agreements. And there's a lot of money that has to be shuffled every day. Billions and millions go through cyberspace. $5 trillion there, or not that much. $5 billion there, $300 billion there, $400 million there. And because companies are constantly moving vast amounts of money around to meet agreements and meet financial agreements, pay salaries, all the companies go into, and the hedge funds and the banks, go into this market where cash sits, okay? The banks and the funds depend on this market to finance their day-to-day operations. Billions of dollars flow into and out of this vault, not really a vault, but electronic system. It's where the businesses and investment firms of all types draw on funds to operate, and others that have excess funds for a day, usually, deposit excess funds for safekeeping and possible income. So you got $700 million that you don't have to pay out till tomorrow, but you got it. They park it in the repo market. The market operates funding and a place to place funds overnight. There are some conditions where they're longer terms, but we just call it the overnight repo market. Okay? From CNBC, the description, in a repo trade, a repurchase agreement trade, when the firms go in and out of this market, Wall Street firms and the banks offer up U.S. Treasuries and other high-quality securities as collateral to raise cash, often overnight, to finance their trading and lending activities. The next day, borrowers repay their loans plus what is typically a nominal rate of interest and get their stuff back. So, your bank, and you hold a lot of debt. They hold treasuries and mortgage-backed securities called agency debt and all sorts of asset-backed securities, ABS asset-backed securities, which might be big buckets of car loans. And when they need cash, they go into the repo market, and they don't want to sell them outright because they want to continue to get the income from these things. So they go in and they say, here's $700 million worth of treasuries. A treasury is an IOU from the government. And the banks and the funds hold a lot of them. So the government, partially how the government finances its debt. It writes treasuries, which are IOUs, and it gives them to the banks, and the banks give them money. And you can even buy treasuries. So the market operates funding for overnight. So bank has a lot of treasuries, it needs some money, it goes in there and it posts up the treasuries and say, I need $300 million. And they take $300 million out and do whatever what they're going to do with it. And the next day, if they get paid, they come back with money and they buy the treasuries or the asset-backed securities or the mortgages back overnight. So there's a lot of going in and out, in and out, in and out. Now, if they put money in, they might get a little income. If they take money out, they might have to pay a little interest. Okay, so they give bonds overnight and then take them back out. Okay, or they put cash in and they take bonds back out. It's like IOUs for cash for IOUs. Think of it as a huge octopus taking in and handing out thousands of loans a second to all branches of businesses, to many branches of business in the markets. Okay, if the demands for cash increases more than people are putting in IOUs, the interest rates can rise. Okay, flow of funds in and out of the repo market. On the contrary, if the demand falls for cash and people put more and more IOUs in, the interest rates might fall. Okay? The interest rates on the repos usually run about 2 to 2.5%, somewhere in there. And it's based on the baseline overnight, federal funds overnight rate set by the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve comes out, they just lowered it a quarter of a point, I think, on Tuesday. And that affects the repo market, usually the repurchase market. When you take money out, it's very close to the federal overnight funding rate. So right now it's at 1.75, I think. The Fed just lowered it. So what happens is the interest rate, overnight rate, is set by the Fed, but the repo market kind of has its own interest rate, which is very close. The repo market typically follow the Fed's set rate. So if the Feds are at 175, the repo is probably going to be in there. So when the repo market was generally 2.5% early this week and a little part of last week, the interest rate rose from 2-something to 4%, which was almost the double. Then it skyrocketed to 8%. Now, even on a car loan, a simple car loan that you may have, if you see your interest rate go from 2.5 to 4, then to 8, you would pretty much say that that skyrocketed. Well, in the repo market, that is off the charts. What it means is known as liquidity. Okay, there's a difference between liquidity and solvency. Liquidity is I owe you $20 and I don't have the $20 on me, but I have it at home. Therefore, I am solvent. I have the money I owe you. I just don't have it on me. I don't have liquidity. Solvency means I owe you $20. I don't have it on me and I don't also have it anywhere else. I'm insolvent to the money that I owe you. The IOU that you have, I don't have the money to pay. That's an insolvent IOU. You could actually say, yeah, I'm an insolvent borrower. I can't pay. So when the repo rate went to 8%, it means that the demand for overnight cash was soaring. Okay, it was rising. A lot more people needed money than was available at 2.5%. So unable to get money, they had to pay more interest. From 2.5 to 4 is eye-popping. From 2.5 to 8, off the charts. Higher than normal rates can cause serious turmoil. You know, these guys are borrowing millions, perhaps billions. And if the interest rate rises a tiny little bit on $1 billion, you're talking a lot of money. Additionally, a lot of firms are only required to keep a little bit of cash. 0.5%, 1%, whatever the case may be. So higher than normal rates, especially if they go to 8, tripled or more than tripled, can cause serious turmoil as the cost of the institutions to borrow overnight skyrocket. You know, they budget a certain amount they have to pay for overnight. They expect a certain amount that they're going to have to pay for overnight. When it goes to 8, it's like, holy mackerel. 8% is regarded as extremely high, to put it mildly. As the rates climbed, the Fed intervened. They injected close to $53 billion into the kitty. The way they do it is they go into the kitty that holds debt, and they buy the debt. That's how they do the gas pedal. When they buy debt, they put money in. And when they sell debt, they take money out. Well, obviously, there was a liquidity problem. And they had to put money into the kitty. So basically, they just go in there and they take treasuries out electronically and they put in money. So they put in $53 billion. Okay. Now, it's not really not a kitty. What they do is they purchase this debt from the various institutions known as the primary dealers. Okay. There are 24 of them. Primary dealers. This is a group of 24 big banks and trading firms. You probably know the names of many of these. And they are primary dealers. They have an agreement. And here's the agreement. We know there's a big kitty. and we have to do what you tell us to do. So if the Fed says, buy treasuries, okay, the Fed wants money put into the kitty, okay? That takes cash out of the system, lifting the gas pedal. So the Feds come in every day, and they say, tell them what they have to do. Today, you have to buy treasuries. So the banks have to, because they're a primary dealer and they have an agreement. They have to buy treasuries and put their money in the kitty. That takes cash out of the system. Okay? You would do that if you saw very high inflation. A lot of inflation. The Feds will come in and say the economy's getting hot, overheating. We need money taken out. So you have to buy. So the 24 big banks and trading firms have to buy. Now, when the Feds want to accelerate the economy, they want money in the system. So they order them to sell treasuries. Go into your vault, Mr. Banker, Mr. Hedge, Mr. Broker, and give me some treasuries, throw the treasuries in the kitty, and we will give you cash. So is when they take the cash out of the kitty and swap them, give it to the banks, there's more money in the system, then the economy theoretically hums, takes off. Well, those are the primary dealers, 24 of them, and they have this agreement. Now, they get consideration from the Fed for doing that, being in there, and they trust that the Fed won't stress them out too much. So it's the gas pedal. Now, this intervention, when the Fed's put in $53 billion by buying $53 billion worth of debt from the 24 dealers. It's the first time they've done that since 08. Interesting. Ominous sounding. For sure. That's the first time they've done that. In fact, and we'll get to this in a bit, they were trying to back out cash out of the system last year. The recent repo rate rise to 8% from 2.5% was called, quote, bordering on chaos by a strategist who's employed by BMO Capital Markets. Bordering on chaos. Now, last year, the Feds sold debt back to the dealers. In other words, the Feds went to the dealers. Feds had a lot of treasuries and agency debt from the crisis. They took bad debt, and they bought them from the banks to unfreeze the system because the banks were holding debt that wasn't so good or could maybe not so good, or the banks needed money, right? They had a big problem in 08 and 09. So the Feds bought a bunch of debt from the banks. The Feds usually house about 800 or 900 billion in debt that they bought from the banks, let's say mortgages, bad mortgages. And in 08 and 09, they raised how much debt they bought, how much debt they had, from 800 to about 4 trillion. So the Feds had a lot of debt in the kitty that they had bought. Now they were trying to get rid of it, right? They're going to say, okay, the crisis is over. We bought all these mortgages and all this, these treasuries from you guys, and now you're okay, so we're going to sell them back to you. So last year, the Feds made them buy back, by decree, about $700 billion off of their balance sheet. Their balance sheet is the $4 trillion worth of debt they had. And they said, okay, we got to, what we call, unwind the balance sheet. We got to get some of this debt off our books, take some cash out of the system. We put a lot of cash into the system when we bought this stuff. They manufactured the cash. And now we want to take cash back out because everything is supposedly fine. So last year, the tune of $700 billion, the Fed went in and said, okay, guys, give me $700 billion, and we're going to give you some of this debt back. So the Feds had stockpiled, you know, $4 trillion worth of debt, and they wanted to give back $700 billion. So last year, they were taking $700 billion out of the market, lifting up on the gas pedal, and their most recent move was a reversal of that. So they took out $700 billion, and they just put back $53 billion because of this chaos, self-described by BMO Capital Markets strategist. they reversed it. For someone like myself that looks at these things and seeing this and seeing the extent of what the problem had manifested into, it was rather stunning. And I was very surprised that the market, for all intents and purposes, did not really react. The spike and subsequent move by the Fed doesn't necessarily mean the environment resembles 08 or 09 right now. The liquidity crisis that we saw in 08 or 09 doesn't necessarily mean that we are back in the problem. But it is concerning to me. Now, everybody's acting like it was a one-off. You know, what caused it? Well, there are a lot of theories of what caused it. But nobody can really say for sure. All we know is that everybody needed a lot of money out of the kitty, and the kitty didn't have a lot of money, and interest rates were spiking. So only time will tell if the recent machinations by the Fed, by giving back, they took out $700 billion in cash, they gave back $53 billion early this week. We don't know whether that solved the problem, and it's a simple one, a temporary one-off occurrence, or a sign of something more ominous going on in the financial gearbox of the economy. Remains to be seen, but it was interesting. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, and we'll be right back. And you're tuned to KVMR FM, your community radio station, on Economic Forum entitled Money Matters. Thanks for joining us today. So, market's down 21. If you're hearing the show at a different time other than Thursday, September 19th, noon Pacific Standard Time, indices mentioned may be different. And anyone can call in if they like, 530-265-9555. 530-265-9555 if you're hearing the show live. So how's the economy doing? Well, let's take a look at that. Doesn't say how the average Joe Blow is doing. I myself, you know, I am of the opinion that we are seeing the long-term effects of inflation. Now, the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts out inflation, and the Fed wants a 2% inflation rate. I am of the opinion, and other analysts, some follow this opinion, that the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the inflation figures that they give, do not accurately reflect what we see in the economy. Now, I'm also of the opinion that the sole main reason why people are having a hard time making ends meet is a simple one. It's always deflected to other things. But, you know, I graduated in 1979 in economics, and I started reading my first economics books at 14. So I have very set opinions on what causes things. And, you know, I have literally almost broken down and to tears where I have had a hard time carrying on conversation. As I drive through some of the towns, specifically in our area, when I drive through Marysville, it's heartbreaking. The poverty, it just breaks my heart. And I do work for the food bank, both food banks here in this area, and the amount of people that we're feeding is just climbing every year. And here's kind of what is happening, my opinion. You know, when we look at the amount of money that is created by the Federal Reserve over time, you know, the deficit is now, I don't know, under Bush, I think it was 7 trillion. Obama skyrocketed to 15 trillion. Trump doesn't appear, in my opinion, to be doing any better. He's running it just as fast. You know, we took, the United States of America took 100, almost 200 years or more, 214 years, I believe the figure is, I'll have to check, to run up the first $1 trillion in debt. Now, debt means that you're spending money you don't have, and you have to pay it back from future income, okay? So when you spend money you don't have, where do you get it? Well, they either borrow it, or they manufacture it. Now, when they manufacture it, it is still counted as debt, okay? We do that. Fed makes $1 trillion, it's debt. The key point is whether you borrow it from another country, borrow it from investors, or borrow it or manufacture it, it goes into the system. So we see inflation. Now, all you got to do is look at the chart of the Dow from the day it began, and you'll see a slowly, steadily rising line, which leads many to say the market always goes up in the long term. Okay, I will agree with that, but not because of the market. Because the market is the best proxy for inflation. The price of a stock can reflect just like the price of a candy bar. So you look at the price of a candy bar and how many ounces you got the last 120 years, and you look at what you get now, and you'll see an inflation rate. Now, depending on the asset that you're looking at, the thing that you're looking at, or the service that you're looking at, the price has risen. What happens is, and this is really key, and I've covered this on many, many shows, one of the economic truisms is that wages do not keep up with the prices of everything else. They lag, called lagging wages. Okay? So, if you have inflation, it's very stealthy because your stock goes up and your houses go up and your salaries go up and your car goes up in value and everything goes up in value, but you are making more. But then you wonder why you can't make ends meet like you did 20 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago or 50 years ago. And the reason being is because, remember, when inflation takes off at, let's say, 10% over 5 years, let's say, which is a lot worse than that, in my opinion, everything goes up, including your wages, but your wages only go up 7 or 8. Now, you don't measure that. You just know you got an increase in wage. But you're having a hard time making ends meet. So I've always used an analogy. It's like running a race with a car. Car goes 5 miles an hour, and I walk 1 or whatever. I probably walk slower than that. You know, I ran a mile You know, in high school, I played football and ran track and brutalized myself in martial arts for 30-something years. And my knees ain't what they used to be. As Mike Tyson used to say, ain't what they used to be. And I have a hard time running. I can run full blast on the beach in the sand. For some reason, that doesn't hurt my knees, but I cannot do that, you know. So I ran a mile. I run a mile every year just to see if I can do it. I ran an 11-minute mile. So people scoff at that time. Well, I could probably run it faster, but 11-minute mile. So anyway, we have inflation running at 10%. Your wages may keep up at 7%. So you see your wages gain, but you've fallen behind 3% in whatever the time period we're measuring. If we continue to see inflation, you fall further and further behind. But nobody actually understands that. So as people fall further and further behind, there are people that are running close to the surface that are, you know, marginally making it. So the more you run inflation, the more people fall under the bus. The more people fall out of the bus and can't make ends meet. And then feds continue to print money, manufacture money, and more people go broke. I know we see, you know, the groups out there saying, you know, it's corporate greed and it's this and it's that. You know, the right always says it's too much taxes. Left says it's corporation profits and blah, blah, blah. But in my opinion, 90% of it is inflation, because the longer you run it, the more people go broke. Because remember, you know, if I walk in a mile and the car is driving 5 miles an hour and I'm walking one, if I continue to run that, I'm going to be hundreds and hundreds of miles behind. So as long as the Fed has a 2% inflation target, which they do, and inflation, according to shadowstats.com, you can go to shadowstats.com, a guy named John Williams there that maintains the same measuring of inflation that was done 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has been changing how they measure it. Okay? They have all sorts of funny ways to mask it. And I'll get into that. I did a show many, 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 many years ago about what they do. Maybe I'll resurrect that and do it again. So the longer they do it, and their feds have always actually said, hey, we're going to run a 2% inflation rate. Well, they've already condemned more people to the food lines that aren't there now. Because if they continue to run this race, those people that are barely making it in 5 years are going to be in the food lines. So that's what we're seeing. But I never see anybody protesting that. Everybody's protesting higher taxes, or Republicans, it's too much taxes, or the left, it's corporate greed. You know, my opinion, studying this since 14, I'm 63, so I'm studying 49 years, okay? I read economic stuff. You know, I heard on an inspirational tape that I listen to inspirational tapes every day. Get me up, get me going, get me out of it. If I'm feeling anxious or depressed or something like that, I'm always listening to inspirational tapes, okay? Some of them are spiritual inspirational tapes according to my religion. But a lot of them are just inspirational tapes, you know. Will Smith is great. He's a great inspirational speaker. Arnold Schwarzenegger is pretty good. All sorts of them. T.D. Jakes is good. Joyce Meyer is great. You know, there's a lot of them you can listen to. And I recommend it. But the longer you run this race, the more people are going under the bus. And nobody ever just, you know, I want to see 5 million people protest for Federal Reserve, stop printing money and go the other way. But they won't. You know, they have different theories that inflation is good for the economy. Well, you know, the economy is all of us. And more people are on public assistance. You know, they're basically in the cart instead of pulling it. And the more people you have in the cart, the slower the cart goes. And the slower the cart goes, the more inflation they run, the more people will be put in the cart. And it's heartbreaking to me because I don't see anybody protesting the real reason why this is happening. And I know it'll continue to happen, you know? Also, when you see this creation of money, it concentrates wealth at the top by a mechanism. And I won't get into the mechanism today. We've talked about it before. But it concentrates wealth at the top. Inflation impoverishes the low and the middle and the lower middle class. That's what inflation does. It enriches the upper class. And it's like a pyramid. The longer you run this inflation, the sharper the pyramid gets. In other words, the fewer and fewer wealth goes to the top, to the fewer and fewer people, and more people fall on the bus. And that's why I particularly know, you know, that unless we see some real monetary reduction or monetary correction in the fiscal monetary policies, not fiscal policy, monetary policies of the central banks of the world, it's going to just be more and more concentrated. It's heartbreaking to me. It really is. And I do the show to try to educate people on that, but you know, everybody's deflecting your head stage right or stage left. You know, the sole cause, main cause, in my opinion, of poverty, at least the widespread marginal poverty we see, where people can't make a living and want a living wage, is the Federal Reserve. That's my opinion. I'm sure others, you know, have others. And when I see, you know, party platforms that want to print more, you know, one of the candidates wants to fund, you know, redoing businesses and buildings into green buildings and all that, and they want to pay for it by establishing federal banks. Well, that's basically saying we're going to pay for it by printing money. That's what they're planning on doing. They're just going to create money and throw it at it. What I've always said, if printing paper, money, solves problems, right? If we just get federal banks and we print up all this money and make everything green, right, all the problems will be solved. Well, if printing money solves problems, how come there's still problems in the world? Right? If money creation is easy, that's like one guy says, well, why not just the Federal Reserve just set everybody $1 million? Well, think about that. Something in your brain says that won't work, but you don't know why. Well, I'm telling you why. Is because that means creating $1 million, which will cause massive inflation, which causes more and more people to fall under the bus. Yeah, your wages will go up. Sure they will. But they won't keep up with the price of everything you pay. And so it's really, really heartbreaking. You know, that's the long and short of it. It's my opinion. But, you know, I've got tons of literature and theories and my own articles to back it up. That's what happens. It's just, you know, it's heartbreaking. Okay, you're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. It's always a joy. And I got my 300th show coming. Now, the website I maintain is Agrata. There's no charge for anything on the website, okay? It's our way of saying thank you for listening to Community Radio Station. And moneymanagementradio.com, you can get every show that I've done back to a certain amount of shows, but there's no charge. I can't charge for it. Federal regulators say can't charge for a website. However, to send questions about the show or comments, send it to the program director at the radio station. That's what you do. And they'll route it to me. And I would welcome your comments on that. I really would welcome your comments on your thoughts on what is causing people to be impoverished by the millions. And it just continues and grows. Okay, you are listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. And remember, before we conclude, this is show 294. It's called Up, Up, and Away. And discussions in the show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves a risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Now, certain investments won't give you total loss of principal. Obviously, right? Not everything you invest in will be total loss of principal. But regulators put in that I must say that. However, I can say that U.S. Treasuries, U.S. debt is guaranteed by the U.S. government. And FDIC savings accounts and CDs are guaranteed your principal by the U.S. government. And so there you go. I want to thank everybody for listening. Stay tuned for fine programming on your community radio station. My name is Mark Cunaberti. God bless.